It's Bulls Eye on the Afternoon with Andy Bull Barch and Matt Douglas on AM 930 WEOL.
Hour number three of Bullseye on the Afternoon on AM 930 WEOL with me, Andy Bulbarch, and Mr. Matt Douglas having some fun here on a Wednesday afternoon and getting awfully close to Wednesday evening. Although I guess this is now like the prevening time of the day, right? Between
sure.
5 and 6?
Yeah, let's call it that. I like that. Prevening.
Yeah, not quite afternoon, not
good
quite evening.
Good prevening to you. Yes, I like that.
Good prevening to all of you. I love it. Well, those that go out to Lorain County Community College's Hoke Theater on Saturday, March 3rd, will be treated to more than just a great prevening. They'll be treated to a wonderful evening because Helen Welsh is going to be performing Superstar, a celebration of the music of the Carpenters. Helen Welsh is a Broadway vocalist and a Grammy nominee, and she's kind enough to join us on the hotline right now. Helen, thank you so much for joining us. How are you?
Thank you for having me, Andy, on this evening.
See, nice. I knew you'd pick up on that. So for those who are coming out to see Superstar, a celebration of the music of the Carpenters, next Saturday, March 3rd at 7, what will they see?
This is a very special show. Richard, first of all, Richard Carpenter gave me permission to do the show because I didn't want it to be a cheesy tribute copy, and I didn't want it to focus on all the sadness that tends to surround the Carpenters. When we think back to the 70s, they had 16 consecutive top 20 hits and were one of the 70s biggest, most successful bands. So I wanted the show to celebrate their incredible music. And then I have some really cool backstage stories, which are intertwined with my own story, too, because Karen really is the reason I'm singing professionally today. So it's a sort of double story, and then all the great songs of the Carpenters. Some of them we have given a little fresh treatment to. Most of them are timeless, which made the job really easy. A couple of them we've, you know, given like a Ray Charles groove to Mr. Postman. But there's fun, great musicianship, and the show's booked into 2019 all over the country. So we're really excited because I have a long-standing relationship with Janet Barlow at Soccer Arts Center. I'm really happy to bring it to her first because she's a special lady, and Ohio, although I know I don't sound like it, is home.
Yeah, so hold on. While we're on that topic, I was reading this story a little bit earlier because you wanted to kind of get away from work a little bit to go to the French Alps, and essentially that's where you ended up meeting your husband. So for those who haven't heard the story, could you please tell that? Because that's such a fascinating story to me.
It's like a bad Hallmark movie that nobody does. So, yes, I was singing and skiing out in the French Alps, which from London is a bit like going from Ohio to Michigan. It's not far. And Doug was there with his friend, and they were skiing. And it was sort of a holiday romance. And I flew back to London, and he flew back to Cleveland. And then we courted across the pond for about 2 years until he came over and asked my dad for my hand in marriage. I moved here in 2003. I became a citizen in 2009, and then I was invited to sing the national anthem at the Cleveland Indians to celebrate my citizenship, which was one of the coolest moments of my career, and I'm still here 15 years later.
So you got hooked. Somehow, some way, you got hooked on the great Buckeye State. Oh, we're going to bring this full circle back around to the concert coming up, the performance a week from this coming Saturday. But you mentioned the national anthem. That was one of the questions that I certainly wanted to ask you about, singing the national anthem at the Indians game back in 2009, because perhaps you've noticed the national anthem is a hot topic these days because of what Fergie did at the NBA All-Star game on Sunday. And everybody's kind of had some fun with this because she kind of put her own twist on it. It seemed like on the majority it wasn't really perceived all that well. But, I mean, I think until you've actually done the anthem in front of a very large crowd, nobody really understands the pressure that goes into this. But you obviously have. What was that experience like?
Oh, I've had some incredible singing opportunities in my career. I've sung on Broadway. I've sung with the Cleveland Orchestra. sung all over the world, but that day stands out in my mind because, and I think maybe I'd like to sit down with Fergie and say to her, you know, as somebody that moved here and became a citizen, so it's a little bit more, I don't want to put anybody's nose up, Joyce, it's maybe the wrong way to say it, but it makes it very special to be invited by a country that's taken you in, you know, to sing their national anthem. So when I was there, you know, and that was a long journey, a lot of paperwork, a lot of money, a lot of interviews, flights backwards and forwards. It was a very stressful time, and, you know, moving countries is massive. So to stand there on that pitch, or what do you call it? You don't call it a pitch.
I think diamond in baseball.
Field.
There you go.
And sing this thing a cappella, and you can hear a pin drop. I had to kind of dig the nails into the palm of my hand, stop myself from crying. It really was one of the most moving things. And what I say when I do master classes around the country and people ask me about the national anthem, my opinion for what it's worth is that the national anthem is not about you. It's about the national anthem, and that you should give it the respect it deserves.
Okay, that's interesting. That's I like that take, and I think it's extraordinarily respectful because, as you mentioned, you know, you're coming at this from a different angle as someone who had to really work to get citizenship in this country. So I think that's very fascinating. And I guess, you know, you hear from folks from different walks of life. You know, I think a lot of people could certainly appreciate some of the creativity that goes into it. But as you mentioned, at the end of the day, you know, the national anthem is not necessarily about you. It's about the actual anthem itself. I'm going to give you a chance to kind of expand on that.
I think that, and again, I don't mind if you want to have a little creativity within there. There's YouTube of me singing. I'm a big equestrian. I love horses. And I've been invited this year, and I've done it before, to go to the Equine Affair, which goes on for 4 days. They have this massive horse show. And there's a big show every night, and I sing the national anthem every night for that. And it's one of the most exciting things to do. And I do take a couple of liberties. You know, I hold that Land of the Free at the end a little longer, you know, because people love it, and it gets everybody squealing and excited and very sort of patriotic and proud. So there are small moments when I take small creative liberties, but never more than it needs. And most, as a teacher, I see this all the time. I say, is it right for what you're doing? Is it right musically, or are you just doing it to show off? And if it's the second thing, then you're wasting your time.
Interesting stuff. Again, we're talking with Helen Welsh. She's an international Broadway vocalist and a Grammy nominee. She's performing at Lorain County Community College's Holt Theater on Saturday, March 3rd, 7 o'clock. We've talked a little bit about the show so far, you know, a celebration of the music of the Carpenters. You mentioned kind of the inspiration behind this, you know, a natural love for the Carpenters. And you also mentioned that you've got some backstage stories that you are willing to share and are going to share at the concert a week from Saturday, and I know you want to save some of those to get people to come out and see, but are there any shorter ones that you might be able to share with us here today?
Yeah, I think one of the ones that surprises people, and there's lots I'm going to tell at the show, and people come up to me afterwards. We've just been floored as a band by the response to this show, because we've done a lot of shows together over the years, but this one encourages the response unlike I've never seen. People come out and they're crying and they're hugging me and they're happy and, oh my gosh, I remembered all these songs and you did act one and I thought you'd done them all and then you came and did act two and I knew all of those. And, you know, it's a wonderful sort of reminiscent journey. And one of the stories I tell, I think, surprises people is Richard was watching a movie one night called Rhythm on the River. And he heard, it's all about a struggling songwriter and his greatest composition, Goodbye to Love. You never actually hear the song. They keep talking about it. And he thought, what a great title for a song. So he began working on the melody and finished it with his songwriting partner. But then he imagined a rather unusual, what we call a fuzz guitar solo, to happen in the middle of this song. So Karen calls up this rock guitarist. And he came into the studio, and they said that we just want you to tip your hat to the melody for the first couple of measures, then take it away. And this was a long-haired rock guitarist. And interestingly enough, at that point in the show, I look around at my very own Charlie Trenta, who is a long-haired rock guitarist. And man, does he rock. And so he always winks at me. And then I say, when they released the single, the Carpenters received hate mail. It was the first time anybody had put an electric fuzz guitar solo in the middle of a ballad. After that, everybody did it. Whitney Houston did it. You name it. But it was the Carpenters that did it first. And at that point, people weren't really ready for it. So they got hate mail, but they also garnered a whole bunch of sort of new friends from a completely a different demographic. And so, and then we go into Goodbye to Love, and Charlie rocks this guitar solo, and people go completely nuts.
Helen, I know you already mentioned your relationship with the Carpenters and one of the reasons you wanted to do this, but what was it about their music? I mean, growing up, as you're developing your voice before you get into the business, that sort of attracted you to the Carpenters?
And that really is the pinnacle of the whole show, really, is that when I was a little girl, my mom was an opera singer. And my dad was he was 25 years in the Army, but when he came out of the Army, he was a very good jazz flamenco guitarist. He didn't like singing, and she liked opera. But she did have some Carpenters cassettes, one or two other easy listening things, but not much. It was opera, 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 jazz, flamenco. So I used to steal into her bedroom and borrow her Carpenters cassette that she had, because I never thought I could thing, because one, I didn't sound like her, and two, I didn't like opera. And I would sing along to Karen Carpenter, and I used to love it, and I'd pick out all the harmonies, and she has this low voice, and I'm a very much an alto, and I used to sit there and think, well, that's funny, I can do this, and I love it. And I say in the show, Karen Carpenter really is the reason I am standing on stage today. It was her that gave me permission to know that it's okay to be an alto, and to not sing opera. And there, from there, I started singing secretly. And I studied flute and piano, because that's what my parents wanted me to do, and eventually was brave enough to say, this is what I'm going to do. So there's this sort of incredible, I don't know, she just sort of gave me this gift in a very strict household where I wasn't really allowed to do that. She said, you know what, it's okay. And I sound, not intentionally, I don't try to sound like her at all, but I sound ridiculously like her, and people say I shut my eyes and I would think it was her. Huh. So we have the same kind of resonance, and I can only believe that's because I listened to her so much as a little girl. Now, I listened to lots of other stuff too, but she just had this velvety tone, and going back to our national anthem, she always kind of sang what was musically right. She did what was right for the lyric and what was right for the song, and didn't murder it, you know, and flog it to death with all this sort of vocal gymnastics. And it was just beautiful and pure, and their arrangements were so smart and way ahead of their time. We know that because some of them, you know, again, they're just timeless. And we do, right at the end of the show, we do this kind of Carpenter's jukebox where people can sing, because people are desperate to sing the whole night. You can see them all singing for hours.
Yeah.
It's full of joy.
Sure. I mean, certainly the Carpenters are one of those music groups that's nostalgic. It takes you back to where you were that time in your life. And from that standpoint, do you have a favorite Carpenter song? And as you've been performing these shows, does it change? I mean, as you start singing them more?
You know, what's funny is I've produced so many shows over the years. And usually when I produce a show, you need roughly about 22 songs for a show. Roughly. Let's say 20. Give it an even number. And usually I'm struggling for the last four, finding the last four. With the Carpenters show, it was, oh my gosh, what do we leave out? And in the end, what we did was we had to medley some of the songs, because it was just heaps of great material. What's my favorite? Oh my God. I'm just looking at the song list right now. Sure. I love Superstar. Don't you remember you told me you love me, baby?
Certainly.
I love that. I love Hurting Each Other. I love We Do. They had a song that wasn't a huge hit called Sweet Sweet Smile. And they did it, but their version is a little bit hokey. And so we've got the cajon out, which is something we use in flamenco. It's a box drum the drummer sits on. And we've changed the whole feel of Sweet Sweet Smile. So Anthony, our drummer, comes out front, sits on the cajon. And it has more of a kind of flamenco flavor, and people love that. So I really enjoy doing that as one of the up-tempos. And then, of course, we've only just begun. It's fabulous. I do solitaire just with my piano player in a spotlight, and he is stunning. All my musicians are stunning. So that's a really special moment, too. So you can see I'm really having trouble going, if you only let me take one to the desert island, I would have real problems.
It's only natural.
I love it.
Yeah, as big a fan as you are of the group, it's only natural. Now, I got to ask you this, too, because I think everybody that gets into show business in any form or fashion, I think immediately we see the finished product on the stage, and we're inclined to think that we want to be the performers. Now, as you mentioned, you became a producer over time. Was that an easy transition? Because it seems like more and more now that's a little more natural. Was that a tough transition for you? And do you have a preference if you're given the option of producing or performing? Do you have a preference?
No, I like to produce what I'm going to perform. That's my preference. So if I'm the reason I started producing was I was freelancing as a singer and being singing this concert and that concert. And I was given songs and I'm like, that doesn't go with that. You wouldn't put that next. I wouldn't put that at the end. That's in the wrong key. This is not good, you know, and there's nothing you can do about it if you're the hired singer. So I thought, well, yeah, there is, actually. Then I have to produce my own show. Then I can sing the songs I want to sing in the order I want to sing them and the way I want to sing them. And that was part of the reason why, although Broadway and London's West End was a fabulous training ground, and I would recommend it to any young performer, it wasn't for me. And the great thing about the music business is there's a place for everybody. There are some people that love to be told what to sing, where to go, and who to be. And that's not me. I am really creative, and I'm always looking to do new things. And this show, The Superstar, has developed over about 7 years, and we're still not done. You know, every time we do it, we sit down and we go through it with a fine-tooth comb, and we get feedback, and we tweak it again. And the plan, ultimately, is to turn it into a sort of like a beautiful Carole King, a Broadway show, but maybe with a different book, not the Carpenter story, but maybe the story about a girl who becomes a singer because of the music of the Carpenters. I don't know. We have some people who have already been to see it and are coming to see it, and script writers and things. So it's like a little train coming out of the station. So the show next week is going to be really special because, you know, this is really the culmination of about 7 years' work, and it's in a great place right now, and I'm really happy with it, and the band is first class. And what was interesting was, quickly, is when I moved here, I got this jazz residency at Nighttown. It's quite a well-known jazz club in Cleveland Heights, and one night, nobody was listening. Sometimes jazz clubs can get noisy, you know, so I turned to the band, I said, do a Carpenter song, which I had never done since I had moved here. And they looked at me like I was completely nuts. And we did this Carpenter song, I Won't Last a Day Without You. And within about 30 seconds, you could hear a pin drop in the jazz club.
Wow.
And I thought, that's interesting. And then the next day, we were booked into this. Now, bear in mind, I didn't know my elbow from my wrist at the time. I didn't know where anything was here. I didn't know any of the areas, you know. So I'd been booked by this other venue, and we arrived, and it was really essentially a biker bar.
Wow.
So we walked in, a little jazz trio, and I thought, oh my gosh, we're going to die in here, but oh well, you know, I'm pretty friendly, and we'll just have to do what we have to do. And we got up onto the stage, and the guys laughingly said, Dave, do a Carpenter song. I said, all right then. And so we did, we've only just begun, and within 30 seconds, every biker in that bar was singing.
Wow.
When we finished, they all cheered. And I went, well, heavens above, what do you know? And that's how the idea began. I thought, this is just everybody's guilty pleasure.
Sure is.
And so I started looking at all the songs and getting the arrangements written and starting to put the idea together. And this is what it seems to be. You know, the strangest people come out of the woodwork that you wouldn't expect, going, oh, my God, I loved Karen Carpenter. Oh, I love the songs of the Carpenters. And it just seems to, I mean, they sold 150 million records. So that tells you something, right?
Yeah, no question about it. Well, between the stories and the performance, sounds like it's going to be a lot of fun on March 3rd. Helen, this was a blast. We had so much fun talking to you, and certainly looking forward to the performance a week from this coming Saturday, March 3rd. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for your time, Andy. I appreciate all your support.
Thank you very much. And again, we're looking forward to that. That should be an absolute blast. The stories, the performance, Superstar, a celebration of the music of the Carpenters. It takes place at Lorain County Community College's Hoak Theater on Saturday, March 3rd, beginning at 7 o'clock. Thank you again to Helen Welsh for joining us. All right, we need to get to a quick break. Matt Douglas and I will return for the final hour of Bullseye on the Afternoon right after this on AM 930 WEOL.
Winter will try to destroy your car. Take it to Benny's Carriage Shop in Lorain. Benny's offers rust protection for new and used cars. Ask about detailing and Miracle Shield paint sealant. Now, with 38 years in business, Benny's Carriage.